Welcome back in everyone to a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. It's that time of year, friends. We are approaching the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and we are beginning our coverage of that early with a wonderful event that happens here every year at 5059 Theatres. It's called East to Edinburgh. And we are joined by one of the amazing shows that is part of that before heading over to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And joining us to talk about this, we have the creator, producer, and actor, Patrick Nash, and the director and actor, Jesse Tendler. They're joining us to talk about their piece, Funny Guy, which is playing at the East to Edinburgh Festival, July 9th, 13th, and 14th. All of this happening at 59E59 Theatres. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting 59E59.org. We always love giving theater festivals coverage, particularly Fringe festivals coverage. This is the largest of them all, I feel like, in the world, the most well-known. And we're excited to bring you this, like, the pre-show of it that happens here in New York. And a perfect way to kick this off is with our guests and their show. So let's go ahead and welcome them on. Patrick, Jesse, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Well, thank you. Thank you. We're delighted to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
I'm so excited to have the two of you here. I'm so excited to, one, be speaking with someone who's going to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, obviously, but two, to be talking to you about this show, which I've heard great things about, Funny Guy. Patrick, why don't we start with you as the creator? Why don't you tell us a little bit about what Funny Guy is about?
Okay, great. It is, I would say, a dark comedy, a kind of a power dynamic about two couples, and it involves romance, betrayal, ambition, and kind of greed, and this kind of, you know, undercurrents of the kind of negative energy that these couples have that is kind of just below the surface, but sticks out in interesting ways.
You're burying the lead a little bit, Patrick. There's also a 7-foot-tall neon marionette that is the conscience of one of the characters who makes an appearance and talks to both one of our leads and the audience.
That's true. there is the giant neon. There's a character that is made entirely of neon that kind of stalks the stage as a kind of an alter ego and an id, a voice of the conscience of these guys. But yeah, that's kind of a prominent feature of this. But it's woven into the writing. It's more than just a visual gimmick. There's something about his character that is as glaring and garish as his appearance.
I mean, that is incredible. I mean, the story already, I was like, okay, I'm hooked. And then you throw in this giant neon marionette and I'm like, go on, this sounds amazing. So, Patrick, what inspired you to pen this piece?
Okay. I've been writing for a long time, but I mostly now have been writing musicals. But during the pandemic, I kind of got away from that a little bit. And I started revisiting some of the notes that I had for plays that I'd written or that I conceived of earlier, but didn't really have the time to put down. So in that kind of quiet period, I had the opportunity to actually write it. I have a lot of ideas half formed in my head, but I had the opportunity, the time on my hands, to actually do it. And I had the opportunity to actually fabricate the neon and get it made. And that was because there was so little else going on. I had the ability and the capacity to actually work on fabricating that, which I made the original neon guy myself in my studio. And I'm also a visual artist, and I do creative fabrication for, you know, scenery and so forth, but immersive installations and that sort of thing. But I'm usually so busy with other projects that I can't really put something that's purely a creative project into my studio onto the table because, you know, there's other jobs going through. So this really gave me the opportunity to do it. And what happened was we started, you know, we were going a little crazy during the shutdown, and we took this guy, I made a handful of them, and we brought them out into the streets in New York and set them up in, I think we set it up around Astor Place one day and at dusk. And it just, it like people were really responding to it in a way that was like very exciting. The first ones didn't move at all. They just sort of stood like suits of armor. But then like the next one we made, the next iteration, we ended up, he was able to move his arms. Then the next one we made had like this talking capability, just this, you know, the crude neon animation, like the vacancy, no vacancy sign, you know, it was like that level of, you know, it's not like these fancy, you know, and there's something about that, the you know, this almost sort of steampunk look, you know, that it's like that neon has now, that kind of makes it kind of engaging in a weird way. There's something about the materiality, the glass and everything like that, that people, you know, people were just sort of crowding around it and asking about it. And then, you know, then I wrote the script, you know, and then, yeah. And then that's kind of how it came to life.
That is incredible. Jesse, let me bring you in now. I mean, you're not only one of the actors, but you're the director, of course. So how was it you came upon this piece?
Well, Patrick and I have actually known each other for 20 years. We did political satire, street theater, and musical theater together back in 2004, 2005, 2006. And so we've known each other for a long time. And it was about a year and a half ago that Patrick and one of our executive producers, James Simon, they reached out to me, the two of them, and asked me about directing this. And I read the script and loved it. So I signed on to direct it. And then after we had done a reading of it, Patrick actually said to me, he's like, I think you need to play the role of Bill too. And I was like, yeah, it's kind of perfect for me. So that's how I ended up both directing and acting in it. And I'm thrilled to be working on it. And we put together an amazing cast, or, you know, five incredible actors involved in it. And it's a lot of fun.
It's fabulous. Well, I want to build on that a little bit, because as we mentioned in the opening and whatnot, this is like a layover. You're on your way to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Yes.
But first you're stopping here at New York at the beautiful 5959 Theaters. I want to know, what has it been like developing this particular iteration that you are taking over this summer of the show?
Yeah. So before I talk about this particular iteration, last year we had done some stage readings of it just as like development, you know, workshops to get some notes, to figure out what worked and what didn't. And what we found out was that 95% of it was working very well, and maybe even 97% of it was working very well. And there were some things that we needed to streamline a little bit, just to make it run a little bit faster, a little bit cleaner. And so over the last year, we've been working on that and just making it run faster, improving the pacing, streamlining some of the language. And then we held casting for it just, you know, about a month and a half ago. And one of the things in New York is when you put up a post for a casting, you get hundreds of submissions because there are so many talented actors in New York City. So we had to sort through many, 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 many submissions. And we were fortunate that the story really resonated with people. And so we got incredible submissions and just from watching self-tapes initially, we were able to narrow down significantly and then bring people in for in-person auditions. And then we did like a chemistry callback. And for two of our actors who are playing the roles of Dan and Emma, when we saw their auditions, even their self-tapes, we were like, wow, they are probably going to be perfect together, and just really nailed the roles. And we had a bunch of extremely talented actors who came in for the in-person auditions. And just like their chemistry was perfect together. Dan is being played by Judd Myers, and Karen Gennaro is playing Emma. And the two of them together are phenomenal. And I'm super excited. It actually was interesting because it took us in a slightly different direction in terms of how the characters were originally written. Patrick had originally written the script with the characters being about, like, more closer to like they're in their mid-30s, let's say. But then we had two actors who are slightly older than their mid-30s who just nailed the roles so perfectly that we were like, yep, we're rewriting this. We're changing that to fit them. So it's actually really interesting just from a casting standpoint that like even if you're slightly outside the age, slightly outside the age range of what the initial casting call was for, if you nail the role and you're talented, people will write stuff to accommodate and change descriptions to accommodate. So yeah, and then one of our other leads is Clara, and she's insanely talented. We've worked with her. Patrick has worked with her for years, and I've known her for a couple of years also. And she's playing the role of Margie, who is Bill and Margie are a married couple in this, and she just nails it as well. The Margie is a particularly brutal character.
Wow, that is amazing. So, Patrick, coming back to you, I'm very curious to know. I mean, we've got these great characters on the stage, these, sometimes dominating, sometimes, larger than life, if you will, literally. What is the message or thought that you're hoping that audiences take away from Funny Guy?
Well, thanks for that. That's a really good question. There's, I'm like my work in general, I consider it to be like what I call mission driven. It's like I'm trying to say there's like a not necessarily a message, but there's a cultural conversation that I want to contribute to. And this particular piece has to do with materialism, lust, addiction, and the sort of dark underpinnings of human relationships, and sort of fit into that moral universe that I personally connect with. I feel like as a writer, it's important to give voice to the to what people might be experiencing, but don't as of yet have a context or a vocabulary to really express. So there's a lot of compulsive behaviors. People are acting and doing things that they're not even, they don't know why they're doing it, right? And I feel like in our world today, there's something kind of weirdly unhinged about people's behavior, both individually and collectively, that I really feel it's super important that we explore that and that we find a way to talk about these things that might, like there's no, like this play does not pretend to have any answers, but my goal is to expand the borders of what we can talk about in hopes that collectively the conversation will be able to include solutions to these kind of problems that we have both personally, individually, and also culturally that that we're facing.
I love that. That is a very important and very timely idea right there. So that's fabulous. Jesse, I want to come to you for my final question of this first part. And that, of course, is who do you hope have access to your show?
I mean, I am strongly believe that it's a show that will appeal to an extremely broad audience. So I want everyone to have access to it. I want it to be, I would say the audience is probably 16 to 85. I mean, I guess if you're 86, you'd probably enjoy it too. But yeah, it's definitely aimed at adults. It's not a children's show, but I would like everyone to have the opportunity to see this and as Patrick said, to be able to have these discussions, to think about these societal issues, the issues of greed and ambition and lust and relationships and betrayal and the sort of dark thoughts lurking in our subconscious. I think it's good for all audiences.
second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I want to start by asking the two of you, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites? And Jesse, is it okay if I start with you on that?
Sure. Yeah, let's see. It's interesting. I actually started my career in film and television as opposed to theater. So I've been influenced tremendously by a lot of film and television programs over the years. And theater has also influenced me for sure. But I've been acting professionally in film, TV, and commercials since I was 3.5 years old. I was a child actor and 100 National Network commercials and a regular on a few sitcoms and starred in a few movies. And so I was influenced by all of the amazing performers I worked with back then. You know, one of the most notable was Kirk Douglas and just his work. I got to work with him. He played my grandfather in a film that I starred in, and working with him was incredible. And just getting to see somebody like that was such an icon, getting to see his process and his work was really amazing. And I also, got to work with Ellen Burstyn and Megan Mullally and Elaine Stritch. And Elaine Stritch, is a Broadway legend, was one of the most phenomenal Broadway actresses of all time. So working with them was definitely a major influence on my career. And just also as a person, working with like Ellen Burstyn, Meg Mullally, they're just like such kind, thoughtful people. And having that experience on set day in and day out with them was just, very formative. And in recent years, I've still continued to act, direct, do some script doctoring, producing, and I also program for several film festivals, so I get to see a lot of new work. And that's one of the things I love most about Fringe, about New York City off-Broadway and off-off-Broadway theater. Edinburgh is this just hot pot of amazing creativity. I was actually there last year with a show that I was directing called Two Faces. And that was... After having that experience last summer, I was like, I need to go back. It's a little bit addictive, but it's an incredible experience. And some of the performers I worked with, or I got to see their performances last year, were really inspiring. There was a show I got to see that was kind of a magic show with a message. Liz Tunkel is the creator of that. It's called Magic for Animals. It was so good. Also, a friend of mine, that was a one-person show. Another one-person show that I got to see was by a performer and creator, Grant Lancaster. It was called One Room Sleep One Night. And just the character acrobatics that he does in transforming throughout the course of that show was incredible. So those are, some of my influences are people no one's ever heard of before that aren't, famous. And I just love seeing new work and seeing how people bring life to interesting characters.
That is an amazing list of inspirations there. Wow, what a life you lived. I can't wait to read your book. That's amazing.
Yes, my memoirs will be coming out in about a decade.
Patrick, how about you? What or who inspires you?
Well, I came to theater and later in life. I like Jesse's been in it for a long time, but I had a long time where I was kind of writing in isolation, but theatrically, right now, I really appreciate the musicals of Candor and Ebb. I find that, again, there's this thing of the moral universe of the play, where they strike a particular, Cabaret, Chicago, there's this kind of like twisted hierarchy of value that resonates with me and that with audiences. I mean, and people talk about writing a it's a hero's journey, or it's a this, or it's an archetypal story, but for me it's all about creating that atmosphere, right? Where, you know, what makes sense in this world? And, you know, you can have all the hero's journey you want. You can have all the moral. But if you don't have that atmosphere, audiences aren't going to want to be in that world, you know. And as soon as the lights go down, they're either going to be in it or not. And you've got about 2 seconds to like convey what you want. And just, you know, I was thinking about, you know, you're talking about like influences, you know, like what were big. When I was quite young, I grew up upstate, and my in 1972, my mother brought me, and I did not want to go. I did not want to go to the theater, right? But she took us to Godspell in Toronto in 1972. And that was like this kind of a mind-blowing experience for me, where, you know, I could actually experience the presence of the actors, the music, the dialogue, the story, all happening. It's like firing on all cylinders. And it was an all-star cast that was, you know, I didn't expect it. I didn't know at the time, but you know, the people on that stage were, you know, had a lot, you know, they're, you know, huge. But that experience sort of stayed with me, you know, as something that the theater could be. And when I started writing for the theater about 10 years ago, you know, that experience kind of like guided me really towards musicals. And I know Funny Guy's not a musical, but there's something about it that has like in a way the presence of the neon as this, it triangulates the experience with the materiality of the prop or the costume. I mean, it's like, it's a puppet, but it's also light and it's also this. And that creates a, like, almost a dimensionality of the, you know, that I think is like helps it to, it makes it unique in a way that keeps me interested.
That is so brilliant. I love all of that. The two of you, I mean, your source material, if you will, this is fantastic. I want to turn now to my favorite question to ask guests. And that, of course, is, what is your favorite theater memory?
I have a few theater memories, and these are going to sound a little bit silly. One of them is, like, because I was working and acting in New York when I was younger, when I was a kid, we did see some Broadway musicals when I was younger. And so I got to see a lot of the most famous Broadway musicals, like Les Mis and Phantom of the Opera and Cats and Starlight Express. And I think those really made an impact on me, as much as, you know, there's lots of argument over, you know, which is someone's favorite. And of course, people have their shows. They're like, that show's ridiculous. I don't like that show. But I love all of the spectacle of it. And, you know, seeing Cats as a 7-year-old, I adored it. Seeing Starlight Express was like, oh, wow, this is like a completely different theatrical experience of people on roller skates and just the way that you could transform a theater and do something totally different. And then, you know, Les Mis, I felt like I was Gavroche, and even though I never lived through a revolution, but I identified with some of the characters and just was able to feel the music. And then, you know, I noticed behind you, on the wall behind you, you have the poster of Fun Home, which is one of my favorite shows as well. I, in the 90s, saw Michael Cerveris as Tommy in the Who's Tommy. And then years later, you know, in Fun Home. And yeah, those are definitely some of my best theater memories, and specifically musical theater, even though, as Patrick said, Funny Guy's not a musical, but musical theater and Broadway spectacles have definitely had an impact on me.
That is so, so amazing. So amazing.
Don't get mad at me, though, because like I say, I came into theater kind of later in life, except for that sort of seminal experience as a young child. I hesitate to say, I'm quick to say it was a young child in 1972, but I like what I was doing creatively in my 20s and 30s and 40s was, you know, I was a kind of a dissipated player in a rock band, you know, in one of these dead end rock bands in the East Village that, you know, just grindingly noisy. And I would almost say like contempt for musicals. You know, I did not, I was not having it. You know, I saw Cats, I rolled my eyes. I saw, you know, people from out of town would come and I would have to go and I, ugh, you know. But what happened, I mean, I kind of came around, I sort of straightened out my life a little bit. And I had a couple of kids and the kids went to school. And then they did theater. And I remember my son was probably in grammar school and that they did Fiddler on the Roof. And, you know, I was talking a little bit about like the quote unquote moral universe of the play where they can, for some reason, it never made sense for characters on stage to break into song, right? In order to set that up so that it makes sense, you have to trick me into buying it, right? I have to be almost coerced into dropping my defenses so that a character can start singing and I can take it in. And when I saw children doing it, it opened my mind to the possibility of adults doing it. And that's when I wrote Beulah Land. I'd been a singer-songwriter for a long time, but I went home and I just cobbled together a bunch of songs that I'd written and added some new stuff. And I thought, you know, at the time, well, I'll try to figure out a loose narrative. And I wrote this whole musical, and that was the first musical I wrote. And it was almost like I had to hear children singing before I could imagine adults singing. You know, I don't know if that makes any sense, but that was my experience.
That is fantastic as well. I love that. I love that. Now, I love those stories, those memories. Those are so fantastic. Thank you both for sharing those. Well, as we wrap things up, I would love to know, do either of you have any other projects or productions coming down the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
Yes. So I'll start with funny guy stuff. So yeah, we're doing the run of Fiction on East 59, July 11th, 13th, and 14th here in New York City. We're also doing a big benefit party for Funny Guy on the 25th. Here in New York, we're even doing a stage reading of it this coming Saturday, the 22nd, at Actors Theatre Workshop. We're doing performances in London at the end of July at Barons Court Theatre, 25th, 26th, 27th of July in London. And then our full run, August 2nd through the 24th at Greenside George Street in the Lime Studio in Edinburgh in the Fringe. So that's for Funny Guy. And outside of Funny Guy, I'm working on a couple of feature films that are in development. I have a music video that I just shot recently for a talented artist named Davey Harris that's specifically has a climate environmental theme to it, which is something that is involved in some of my other projects as well. I'm the programming director for the Climate Film Festival, which is happening during Climate Week NYC, September 20th to 22nd here in New York at DCTV. 87 Lafayette Street. So that's one of the projects that I'm most excited about right now as well, in addition to Funny Guy.
Wow, that all is amazing. Wow. Patrick, what about you?
Well, yeah. So yeah, Funny Guy is the big thing. I would really love it if you and your listeners could come to the benefit we're having on June 25th at the Kite Club at 40 Avenue C. It's a really cool venue. They have a lot of great programming there. And we're going to be doing, it's about a week away. Wow, that's really coming up. yeah, we'd love it if you could come, you know, and it's a, like I say, it's a benefit, which we need the money. But in addition to that, I do these immersive environmental environments that, and I'm doing one for the Chashma Gala, which is in about a week, called Vomitorium, which is, it's a I do. I do what's called activated graphics. It's a strobing environment with red and blue, and it's very kinetic and exciting. And longer range, I'm planning now to do one of the musicals. A lot of musicals I have, Beulah Land and also Oh No, My Leg, are kind of medical related. And I have plans to perform them, to do a run in an alternative theater space that involves a kind of a speakeasy theater, right? It's in a retail environment that there's a trap door and it leads you into the theater, right? And there's a what I call performative retail, which is something I've developed. I created something called the No Shop, where people would come in and have the opportunity to buy these like fake products, you know, and where the actual performance is retail, right? Which is a commentary on, you know, on the you know, the you know, commercial corporate economy, but also makes you think about what we're doing. And so, yeah, I'm hoping to get something like that going next summer, either in some of the 60% of vacant commercial real estate in New York City, or in a mall. I would love to build out an environment in a mall. So that's my short-term and long-term plan.
It's amazing. Some wonderful projects that we need to keep tabs on in addition to your show. And that leads to my final question, which is, if our listeners would like more information about Funny Guy or about either of you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Well, we have a website, www.funnyguyplay.com. There's also patricknashtheatrical.com, and that has information about the other shows and other projects I've done. I also have a commercial practice at Patrick Nash Design, and that'll tell you everything you need to know.
For me, I would say for this show, for Funny Guy, definitely just funnyguyplay.com, and we have an Instagram account, we've got Facebook, you know, all those social media, Funny Guy Play. And for me personally, my Instagram is JesseRyan10. If people want to follow me there, I'll be posting. LinkedIn is a good way to connect with me. My IMDb page has all my film credits and upcoming stuff. It's just imdb.me. That's me/Jesse-R-Tendler. So those are probably the best ways. And then my website, just jessertendler.com. Best way to keep in touch with me. And before we wrap up, I actually want to plug a couple other Fringe shows, as you know, some of our friends in the Fringe this year. Our amazing producer, Allison Parker, who we're thrilled to be working with on this, is also producing a couple other shows at Fringe this year. One's called Do This One Thing For Me, that's at the Bedlam Theater, and then a show called Unseen at the Zoo Playground. So I wanted to plug her shows. And then my friend Kelly McCon, who was at Fringe last summer with a show called Catholic Guilt that sold out its run, is coming back to Fringe again this year in Edinburgh with the same show that I'm sure will sell out. So,
all amazing. Thank you for shouting those out. Well, Patrick, Jesse, thank you both so much for taking the time today to speak with me, for sharing this incredible work. I cannot wait to see it. I'm so excited, and I can't wait to see the success and the excitement that you bring to audiences over at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. So thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you so much. And it was really a pleasure to be here.
Tickets for 59 East 59, get them now. I actually just checked the website and we've got like 4 seats remaining at one of the performances. Like, it's selling out fast. So, and tickets are only $20, including the fees. So 11th, 13th, and 14th of July.
Amazing. My guests today have been the creator, producer, and actor, Patrick Nash, and the director and actor, Jesse Tendler, who joined us to talk about their upcoming production, Funny Guy, which is part of East to Edinburgh. It's happening July 11th, 13th, and 14th at 59 E59 Theaters. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting 59e59.org. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting in our episode description and social media posts, and you will definitely want to keep tabs on these two. They've got some amazing stuff coming down the pipeline that you will want to check out. But right now, You need to head to 59e59.org and get your tickets while you still can. They are going fast for this fabulous show, Funny Guy, happening July 11th, 13th, and 14th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.